Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we discuss all things gambling, from the recent Supreme Court ruling to a chat with one of the most prominent golf odds makers in the business, Jeff Sherman.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by two co-workers who, you know, from time to time like to put a little money down on a sporting event. Let's not kid around here. It's Joel Beal and Chris Powers. Guys, how's it going?
I got to be honest. When you brought this all up, I was just having flashbacks to one of our worst gambling bets that we all suffered together.
I was hoping
at a recent basketball game.
Oh, that's right. First half. Who is it? Rutgers?
Pure degeneracy.
Was it Penn State?
Indiana.
No, Indiana.
Rutgers, Indiana. Oh, man. Indiana blew like a 20-point lead in the first half.
It was 17-2, I believe, was the score.
We were laughing around, yucking it up.
We touched some money. Yeah. Totally touched
some
money.
Talking to our stockbrokers, how we're going to diversify this money. And
Rutgers just went on a Durant-like tear.
And it wasn't that we lost. It was that we bet on Rutgers basketball. That's how I think we knew.
You had to twist my arm into that one. But, man, once it was going, we were yucking it up. It looked like a lock. And I'm glad you brought that up because gambling is the worst, but it's also the best. And
you have those
losses you remember, but you also have those thrilling wins. And, you know, gambling's been in the news a lot, obviously. The recent Supreme Court ruling struck down a federal law that now opens it up for any state to allow legalized sports gambling. This is a huge deal. I think it's been a long time coming. And, you know, there's some misconceptions. It's not like you can all of a sudden just bet right away in your own state. It depends what state you're on. But Joel, I mean, I'll start with you. I mean, this, you know, was kind of a surprise, but it really wasn't a surprise. It was a long time coming.
No, really, for the last 4 or 5 years, a lot of the sports leagues have already been planning this and have protocol and the framework in place. So when that green light did go on, they weren't spending another year or two getting things ready. I think particularly in golf, Jay Monahan's been very vocal on the PGA Tour's openness to embrace this. And it's not just because, hey, you know, we want to adapt to the marketplace. It's, if this is going to happen, how do we get a piece of it?
Right.
And at a time when TV deals are starting to not be quite as profitable as they once were, this is a very big funnel to open up for leagues that could really not only expand what they can do in their footprint, but really embrace how they grow as a game. And I think you're going to see players have kind of wondered how much of the purse is going to go up, kind of going further with now sponsorships starting to wane a little bit and harder to find endorsements for tournaments. This could be a big way to really supplement that loss. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out.
It will be interesting, though, because you're right. They've talked about an, quote, integrity fee, which is basically a tax. And the people in Vegas are saying, whoa, 1% is a lot. And, we're all thinking 1% is nothing. But the margins are actually not as amazing as you think. Vegas always wins, basically every month, 99 out of 100 months. But the margins are kind of slim because they're trying to get a 50-50 result, and then they're taking the 10% from the one side. So, you know, they're not – to give away 1% is a lot to ask for. So that's going to be interesting. You're right, though. These sports leagues would be smart to get a piece of it. These states would be smart to get a piece of it. And speaking of those states, I mean, Chris, you're a New Jersey native. Is
Jersey.
This one of your – proudest moments? Your state kind of led the charge for this.
Yeah, definitely. And I will say the only downside to it for me is that, you know, it kind of takes away the Vegas aura. I've never been, and I was always planning to go. And
wow.
But now, I can just go to Atlantic City or Monmouth Park. And,
you know, not to cut you off, that sentiment's been said at a few places. I feel like I would answer that by, listen, people can drink and party anywhere, but New Orleans still has this mystique around it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Vegas, I think there's still something about it's the Mecca. It's people will travel to it. But you're right. That it will be interesting to see how that plays out. But I'm not a naysayer. I think there'll still be something special about the whole atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because and we'll talk later with Jeff Sherman, who is works for Las Vegas, Westgate Las Vegas Superbook out there. He's the main golf odds maker. And he said the exact same as Joel. He said people are still going to come to Las Vegas. He actually thinks that this, you know, decision helps Las Vegas, which to us, we were all like, wow, Las Vegas is going to get crushed. I don't know if he's just trying to put a positive spin on it. He thinks that they're going to be able to do even more online gambling across the country now. It opens the door for them there. They're obviously much more set up than these other states, although Jersey has been kind of, you know, working it, and they have all the casinos you mentioned in Atlantic City. But he argues it's actually going to help them. I'm not so sure, but because like you said, Chris, you've lost your love or want to go to Las Vegas. But you live in New Jersey, and today is the day I think it really starts. We saw Delaware a couple days ago. Their governor placed a $10 bet on the Phillies money line. Joel, you scoffed at that, but he won. He won the bet. The Phillies won. Well done by the governor there. Well, I'm sure we'll see New Jersey. Is this a national? You know, it's not national. Is this a huge holiday for you, Chris? You have banners flying outside your house.
Jersey strong, stronger than the storm. But the fascinating thing with Monmouth Park is that they had like a whole bar, TVs like set up since like 2014. I read maybe even earlier than that. So they obviously knew this was coming sooner than later. The fascinating thing with me is that, like everything nowadays, things that were taboo once,
right?
Like common sense is kind of prevailing. Right. Like when I was a kid, remember like that Pete Rose cover of Sports Illustrated? Like to me, when you were 12, gambling was like
the worst thing,
the most illegal thing ever.
Yeah.
And now that I've learned about it, you learn the odds. It seems like common sense. Like,
yeah. Well, I started gambling when I was 10. And I did get in trouble because I bragged about it to my mom, which was stupid. But I did win a bet on the Bills Dolphins playoff game for $5 when I was 10. So I had a young start here. But no, I agree. It's definitely become less taboo through the years. I mean, you have ESPN already, both on their website, or not just ESPN, but I just mentioned them because everybody watches ESPN, SportsCenter. They talk about the lines. They talk about the odds. You know, for years,
the newspaper.
Hank Goldberg. For years, you're at the newspaper. They put the spread. I would always look for that because, you know, Vegas knows better than these quote unquote experts. I mean, if you'll see a college football team that's ranked get upset by another team, and then you look at the line. Right. The unranked team was favored by a touchdown. I mean, so I think for years, anyone who is really serious about sports would kind of look at the lines anyway to get a better feel for what a game was going to look like. And yeah, these networks were already kind of ramming it down our throats.
They ram it down our throats, but then one of our favorites, Al Michaels, would always kind of slip in.
Oh, totally.
This play means very much to a very certain few people right now.
And of course, Musburger.
Musburger as well.
Live, yeah.
And you're right. It went from taboo to something that everyone kind of did, but no one really could acknowledge. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. It's funny, Chris, you mentioned the Pete Rose. The course I grew up at working, every morning the first guy out who almost beat us at 5:40 in the morning was the guy who turned Pete in. And he was ostracized from the community because Pete was the hometown boy. And as much of a slime ball as he was, this other guy was even worse for kind of being the patsy. And that's the kind of aura that surrounds gambling. Now you said it's legal, and it's going to be interesting not only to see how it plays out in the public forum, but I mean, everyone knows a bookie of some kind. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And
bookies take the worst hit here. I mean, good luck breaking up with your bookie, by the way. I mean, it might be a little, it's easier said than done, but
you're going to have him outside your door in the middle of the rain with the stereo asking you to come back.
Yeah, I mean, if you can go to the grocery store at some point now and start making bets, I mean, you're no need to have a shady bookie waiting there. The law just seemed so dumb to me because, you know, you couldn't do it. You didn't really even talk about it much, but yet everyone did it online anywhere. Anyway, Chris, I know you do. Yeah. Not to throw you under the bus there. And,
can't wait till my mom listens to this and realizes
maybe
what I've been doing.
Mom and your girlfriend might want to not listen to this one. You did have the under in the game two, right?
Oh,
the final. Sorry about that. That was tough.
Of course, the Warriors just exploded.
No, but it's everywhere anyway, and then you could go to one state in the country and do it.
Yeah.
I mean, what is
or overseas?
Ridiculous.
Like
or
you
overseas,
know, you
would of course.
Write a good thing at the Open.
Right, you go to the British Open, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, let's do a gambling story. This is so much fun. You're allowed to do it. I mean, they're on every corner there. It's nuts. They're like McDonald's over there. You pop in, you make a bet. So it just seemed like we were behind the times, and if anything, we were really protecting Las Vegas. I'm sure they've put a lot of money into lobbying for these laws to stay that way. But, you know,
little money is not, it's absurd. I think it was like $12 billion they've put in the past 3 or 4 years in lobbying. So it's not an insignificant fund. I do wonder, too, how much this was accelerated by the kind of explosion of fantasy sports, because at some point you saw this in the DraftKings.
I was going to bring it up next.
Is this a game of chance and game of skill? And
once
that order came down, you realized, okay, if that's the case, then man, this wide sell betting is not that far off on the precipice. Here we are in 20. I thought this was going to happen eventually in our lifetime. I didn't think it'd be this quick, though.
Yeah, I agree. I used to say that to people. I was like, why is this a big deal? We're all going to be doing it. We're all going to be allowed to do it in within our lifetime. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it kind of sped up pretty quickly. But you're right, the DraftKings thing, FanDuel and DraftKings, the daily fantasy sites, that's another part that just always, you know, blew my mind. It was like, wait, they're allowed to operate? What is I mean, I know it's technically a difference, but Chris, have you done any of that stuff?
I've never done DraftKings. I'm more of a
really.
I've even done the Masters thing couple times. Yeah, $20 to win $1 million. I mean,
I you know, I've seen people do it. Yeah. You know, past jobs, people would be doing it during the day. Yeah. Be like, oh, who should I start tonight? But I've never personally done it. I'm kind of more of a, you know, pick a side.
Right.
But
old school.
It seems
old school powers here.
It's totally black coffee. And, yeah. But.
You write out your bets in like pencil on a notebook and have a slip that you hand to your bookie?
I used to keep them all on my phone, and I just lost so much that I stopped.
Can't keep it again, on a lot. That's an amateur move, too. First of all, I can't keep a paper trail.
I know.
Chris's mom, Chris's girlfriend, let's not listen.
I used to be like, tell my brother would be like, did you take the Giant? And I'd be like, stop. Yeah. But it's too late now, I guess, because they're going to listen to this.
Yeah, well, you know, on one hand, I'm glad that this is around. On another hand, I'm glad it wasn't around when I was in high school and college, because I probably would have lost a lot more money.
That's how I paid for my tuition, man.
The other way. I mean, Joel, at one point you were mentioned in an article, right, about your picks, your NFL picks.
Yep, and then, of course, promptly as soon as that goes up, things go a little south. I'm sure. There's an incident.
But you were picking
two.
At like a 65% it clip
was,
or something.
I was at a pretty good rate there for a little bit.
Yeah.
But Chris just kind of triggered a question. So obviously, in terms of us, it applies to golf. I think we all kind of have different bets and methods of how we do. So,
right.
Chris, I just want to, since you're kind of the young guy, what are the different things you bet on in golf, and what's your kind of your mythology behind
it? The site I use, it doesn't have, you know, I've heard of other sites that have like team totals in football, and my site's kind of behind the times on that. So for golf, they like I read your thing on the seven burning questions for gambling.
Right.
It's just winner and, you know, majors, obviously futures and matchups, which if you really want to lose money very quickly, you bet on matchups in golf every day. It's
interesting you say that, because
I think so.
Jeff Sherman, we talked to that. That's where the sharps, as he says, that's where they do most of their betting.
Really?
Yep.
The sucker play is to bet on the winner.
Right.
Because of course you're not putting a needle in a haystack, but
especially now with all the talent, anybody can.
So the matchups are more, they're looking for just slightest edge. Like Shane, who was it? A couple weeks ago, someone pointed out, it might have been Luke. There was a matchup bet that he posted, and it was like, that doesn't make any sense. It was someone, every once in a while they'll make a mistake, is my point.
I think
that's where you, now again, anything can still happen in a round of golf, but I don't think that people like us are making those bets as much, though, because if we're going to make just a couple bets, we want a bigger payout.
Right.
That's kind of the allure of betting on the winner. But so you usually bet on the winner.
Yeah, I usually go majors. I try to stay away from golf because, like, I have done the matchup thing. And if you want to, like, live and die on a Thursday afternoon with, like, Brandon Harkins versus Lucas Glover, that's, like, so degenerate. That's a matchup I've bet on. And it was, like, they were through 16.
Yeah.
It's not a fun. So it's not a fun day.
Let me provide a spirited counter to that.
Yeah.
I view picking the winner as almost playing the stock market, right? Like, it is your way to get big or get a lot of money quickly, but the odds are just so not in your favor. That's not worth it. Whereas the matchups, you're not going to make a lot, but they're also relatively small risk. And if you play it smart, just like you play the stock market, if you just kind of keep at it and not try to get big, if you, now this is the end, making money. If you want the action, you're right, it might not quite fulfill that. But if you are just trying to pad the bank account, I think matchups is the best way to go. And you have to stay away from the Tiger Woods versus X or Jason Day or Dustin Johnson. You have to go those Perkins route. Yeah, because obviously nothing's, you know, one of the reasons we love sports is we never know what's going to happen. But especially with golf, there's usually enough evidence and not only how they're playing coming in, but what type of course it is, what their history is at that course, that it really is. I mean, there's no foolproof way. I don't know about you guys. One of the funniest things I would hear is the Saturday morning radio is like lock of the week, lock of the century. There's no such thing as a lock, but in terms of your best payout, like I think
Tiger on Saturday. Saturdays is here.
This is true, but I think if you're looking just for a safe, if people are looking for a way to kind of get into it, I think this is a good starter.
Yeah, no, I like you tweaked your answer there. When you first started talking about the stock market, I was like, Joel, I don't know how you play the stock market, but I know I was going to say, yeah, the betting on the winner is like being a day trader in the stock market, like really risk going for the big hits. But you're doing the matchups, it's a little more safe. You're you know, diversifying, finding the mutual funds, and that's how you could kind of build, you know, kind of like with poker too. You're playing like these cash games instead of the tournaments, the all in, you know, going for the big hit.
The worst part about betting the winner is when you do get close. Like,
yes.
Like, for example, Ricky Fowler at the Masters.
Yes, I had him.
You're like, you know, you watch the whole week. Yep. You're like, this is not going to happen. You're out. You think you're out on Thursday. And then he gets there Sunday, and now you're riding this high. And then Reed, you know, you don't even get a playoff out of it. Yeah. And it's like, the reward was there, and then it's just.
I had Fowler and Rahm closing, and one other guy, too. I had three guys in serious contention. And
Leishman was in contention.
Yeah, Leishman.
He was
Leishman
a huge payout
off.
If you took him.
I had him. I had five guys, and it was amazing. Like, Day was my worst pick, and even he was, like, in the top 15 entering the final day. And I was like, you never know, 63 or something. And these guys played great, but Patrick Reed just stayed there. But you're right. It's deflating because – well, on one hand, it's good because you get like a whole week out of
it. Right.
But on the other hand, when you come close, it's tough. I'm sure we'll talk about that more. We give some of our stories. But, you know, bringing up the matchup, so is actually interesting because that's the area where, and we've seen this in tennis, where these leagues are worried about fixing.
Yeah, shaving points, without a doubt.
So that's scary. That's a little scary.
I will say there are. I'm pulling a blank. Excuse me if I'm not giving credit to, but someone did put in Excel, and I think we've seen throughout the years in terms of basketball line, especially college basketball and tennis, that the margins have got so short that you do wonder what's up there. For the most part, that you haven't really seen that in golf. So, again, you never know what is actually going on behind the scenes, but so far, I think one of the reasons Monahan feels very confident in going down this route is not only is golf a game of integrity, it's also pretty easy to kind of tell when these things go on. It's really hard to mask throwing away a shot or two in golf, especially now with the heightened spotlight. So,
And they have this new program that they've put the players through, but also this I forgot the name of the company they work with, who has an algorithm that can kind of detect funky betting patterns, and that can stick out. But still, you know, you could have, I'm not going to name any names, but two random guys playing in the final round together, both out of the tournament, and one guy says to the other, wink, wink, you know, I'll let you win today, and they put a bet on it. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but that is a risk.
Especially, I don't think we're speaking too out of school here. There have been players in the past decade or so that have had noted gambling problems, and those guys obviously will have probably closest scrutiny than most, but it is out there, and just think, not only as we're talking about, we're just relatively three normal sports guys. This is very prominent, a lot more prominent than people realize, and these guys are just like us, and if they've had a bad week or bad year, an extra 20,000-30,000 go a long ways.
Sure. I do want to say another type of bet. Obviously, you have betting on the winners, you have matchups, you have prop bets, which the golf prop bets can be. There are some, you know, the funny ones, who will the winner hug first, the wife or the cat, you know, there's stuff like that. And, you know, will someone make an ace? There's that kind of stuff. And, of course, those are the ones where you get hosed on the most. Yeah, but the bet that I like the best, and it's over in the U.K., they don't really have it here yet, it's the each-way bet. And you bet on a golfer both to win and finish each way, they call it, and it differs in whatever book you go to, but it's usually top six. And you get a quarter of the winning odds on a top six. So if someone was 100-1, you're betting, let's say, £5. You do a £5 each way bet. You're betting £5 at 100-1 and winning, and £5 at 25-1 and then finishing in the top six. And it's really fun. It keeps you involved. It's great until you have Bill Haas playing in the second to last group, and he ends up finishing outside of the top six somehow. But it's a good, or Hunter Mann 1 year bogeying the final two holes to finish T7. But you know, you remember these things. But it's a good bet.
Should I hope bet on Kuchar next time.
Kuchar's a lock, although he's usually more the T9 guy.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we talked with Jeff Sherman, who is the manager and golf odds maker at Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. We had a great talk with him. We talked a lot about Tiger Woods' odds because obviously they are a little slanted compared to other guys. We talked about the Las Vegas Golden Knights and how Vegas took a little bit of a bath with that. And we talked about the new ruling and how it affects Vegas. So it was a really interesting talk with Jeff Sherman. We've had him on the show before. We'll have him back on again. He's great. Please have a listen. All right. We're happy to welcome back to the podcast Westgate Las Vegas Superbook manager and golf odds maker Jeff Sherman. Jeff, thanks for coming on.
No, thanks for having me.
So how does one get into the sports gambling business? Did I miss odds making 101 in college? And I was just wondering, what's your background and, you know, how long have you been at Westgate?
Yeah, I missed that class too. But when I moved out here to Vegas after I graduated from UC Santa Barbara, me and a buddy just moved out, didn't know what I was going to do. I looked in the UNLV about extending my education. So I started my MBA there. And while I was doing that, my buddy's mother knew someone at the Imperial Palace, so we had an inn to work there. They asked us what departments we might have interest working in. We both said sportsbook, but they wouldn't take both of us since we were roommates, so since I was going to be here longer, my buddy let me go into the sportsbook. He went to another department, and fortunately enough, the book that I went to at the IP, they fostered creativity and learning how to make the odds. So I was thrust right into an environment with that. Now, I started out as a ticket writer, a teller, where you accept the wagers, and you have to start there and move up the chain. But as I was doing that, they were teaching me the process of the odds making. And then you get promoted to supervisor, and I've been in the business for over 25 years at a few different properties. Been at the Westgate since 2004, and it's great to see the industry just thriving at this point.
Wow, that's crazy. So you had no idea about this when you were an undergrad or anything? Thoughts about getting into this?
I was a business economics major at UC Santa Barbara and still trying to figure out what I wanted to do, but I knew I didn't want to sit behind an audit desk or something like that every day. So I went this route, and it's been better to me.
Sure. You know, just in general, how does golf kind of compare to the other? I mean, obviously you have a hand in other sports as well, but how does golf compare to the other sports? I assume it's a much smaller market for you guys, but is it growing? Is it shrinking? How does it kind of stack up?
Yeah, it's considered one of the ancillary markets. Mm-hmm. You know, we have obviously football is a thing that drives the sports books, NFL and college, and then you have the other sports with the NBA, Major League Baseball. We do real well handle on that during the summer. And now with the Vegas Knights out here, handle's increasing on hockey, but it's basically considered an ancillary one like NASCAR is. For us in the Las Vegas market, soccer, I do a lot with that too. But, you know, the handle on golf has been tremendous the last few years. It just keeps growing each year. We just had a record handle on the Masters, which the Masters is the most highly wagered golf tournament throughout the year, at least in the Vegas market.
Sure.
And it keeps growing each year exponentially. Wow. And we've just seen it, that has brought up the handle in all the other tournaments too. But, you know, with the where golf is at right now with the international young stars that it has, with the resurgence of Tiger and even Phil Mickelson, we're just at an all-time high right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Tiger. Obviously, his comeback has got to be great for you guys, great for business. It's great for us, obviously, as well. How busy has he kept you? I know during the Valspar, there was that one round, I think on Friday, where
you updated the odds twice during his round. So how you know, he kind of keeps you on your feet, I guess.
Well, yeah, he's the only one that has that effect, really. Mm-hmm. You know, it's my day's off Thursday and Friday, and a golf tournament, everyone knows, starts Thursday. And so when he's involved in that, I have to be aware of it. Even, yeah. You know, I have to get up early and check on that stuff, and sometimes I have to adjust his next major odds or whatever else we might have involving him before the books even open, or else we're going to expect that flood of money just based on a few holes from him. And yeah. He's really the only golfer that, and it's more when he does positive things that has that effect that you'll see the wagers come across our app immediately. And so when he's playing, I expect to have that extra work to do and keep an eye on that. You know, other golfers, it's going to take a round or two. If, let's just say, Ricky Fowler or McIlroy goes out and shoots a good round, mm-hmm. I can get away with waiting to adjust their odds. We might get a few small bets and stuff, but Tiger's the one where if he's at the longer odds, he's 40 to 50 to 1, even 20 to 1 where we have him for the U.S. Open, if he were to come out when he plays the Memorial and be right near the top of the lead, you're going to see his odds drop immediately during the first round.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I wonder, is it... As an odds maker, is it exciting to have him doing that, or is it kind of scary that you might, you know, not move quick enough to react to him?
No, I like it. I like the challenge of it too. And you know, first of all, in the golf, even unlike NASCAR, when you're talking about these ancillary sports, NASCAR, you can figure it down to a few drivers on those tracks, but golf is still right now at this point so wide open. Mm-hmm. Even if we do have our liabilities add up on some golfers, it's still tremendously hard to pick the winner of that golf tournament that week.
Right.
And so the thing that we have to be more aware of, and you know, we put these up week to week, not really far in advance, is the matchups. That's where you can really get burned. It's just one golfer beating another. Mm-hmm. And that's where most of the sharp play comes in. Mm. We get most of the general public that plays in the outright market. So, you know, even if we have liability, we've had our largest liability the last two times that Tiger has played in the Masters of any tournament that I've ever booked. Hmm. And, you know, you can skirt around that, as, you know, and the thing that you mentioned about him being good for it, he's tremendous for the books when he's playing well but doesn't win.
Right.
That is our optimal position.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned a record handle for the Masters, and I forgot, you tweeted this out at one point, he either had the most money or the most tickets, but Ricky Fowler was number one in the other category. I forgot which one it was. I think that's what you said. Is that true?
Yeah, it's. I can't recall back to that one. I mean, right now, Ricky Fowler, on a week-to-week basis, he's the one that's driving that. He's in first in tickets and money, generally speaking.
Wow.
And it'll be interesting to see at the Memorial how that goes, but right now, Ricky Fowler is the most popular golfer out there. Tiger's liability adds up more than everyone else because generally his odds are longer than those guys mm-hmm. that are shorter than 20 to 1. So especially with Tiger, he opened at 100 to 1 for the last Masters. Mm. And we took bets at him at 100, at 80, a lot at 50 and 40. So you had that excess liability versus starting some of these guys out in a lower odds range. And that's where we're at right now with Ricky Fowler in the U.S. Open.
Wow.
I started him out at 16 to 1. And right now he's leading the ticket count and money in that aspect, and he's down to 14 to 1. But it's a lot easier to control the liability that way when they start out lower.
Right, right. So Rick, more people right now are more people and more money are coming in on Ricky Fowler than Tiger. That's
right now. Right wow. now, yes. And right now we're in a positive position on Tiger. I'd opened him at 25 to 1, mm-hmm. and off his Players Championship performance, he's down to 20. He saw a little bit of support there, but. Mm-hmm. This is the one major that people don't go all in on Tiger just because of how difficult the conditions are for the U.S. Open. And so, you might find his odds higher than you're going to see like we did at Augusta, where at one point we got down to single digits on him, and eventually he eased back into the lower teens. But people aren't ready to just jump on him for the U.S. Open like they are the other majors just because of the difficulty of especially the driving conditions where that's been one of his biggest deficiencies since he's been coming back well.
Right. Yeah, obviously you mentioned, I think, yeah, he did get down to what, 8 to 1 or something at one point for the Masters, and people freaked out and are like, oh, he shouldn't be the favorite and this and that. But, you know, you're talking about it. His popularity moves this stuff a lot more. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you think he's the actual favorite. You're just, you have to protect yourself.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. And you know, you can see a true indication of that if you delve a little deeper and look in the matchup prices, and you can see that for the Masters, we had some of the other top golfers favored over Tiger, Thomas, Rory McIlroy.
Right,
and you
right.
can see that's more of an indication on the true power rating on where these guys are. The outright market, sometimes your liabilities just get to a point where you're just trying to reduce that, shift it to other golfers, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're the highest power rated golfer that week, but it's just how much general public has accumulated their support on him.
Sure. So you mentioned a power rating there. Is that something that you come up with every week for each tournament?
Well, generally when I see the field released for a weekly tournament, I'll go through and just start doing an initial assessment and assigning some odds to some guys and trying to group them as far as like A, B, C golfers on just a general scale. And when I put that together, then I start digging into the stats deeper and come up with how I'm going to rate these guys. And then ultimately when they're done with the preceding week's tournament, I'll add those stats to it and then kind of place and shift the odds around where I think the expected money and support is going to come in. But you might see somebody I had 40-1, but I know I'm going to expect money on this course on them, and you might see them open at 25-1 instead of what I really believe they should be 40-1,
right,
or vice versa. If I'm not expecting it and it's a golfer that doesn't command that much, he might be a 60-1 golfer, but I can afford to place him up at 80 or 100-1.
When you're doing that, when you're looking at the stats, what matters more to you, a player's history at a certain course or just how well they're playing at the time?
Well, generally for myself, I put about 80% of the weight onto course form, current form.
Yeah.
But then there's certain courses out there that I'll have to put more weight onto the course form. And the number one that comes to mind is Augusta with that, because over the years we've just seen golfers in poor form that have performed well, consistently well at Augusta, and they go back there and do the same thing. And I can just bring back to Tiger a few years back when he was really struggling, and you know, he had the what everyone was calling the yips at the time.
Right.
And he ended up finishing 17th at Augusta when people didn't even think he was ready to play that week.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, we've seen these golfers time and time again go to courses that they're really familiar with, that they really have a good history on. And if there's something telling to that, then we have to kind of weight it a little bit more than we normally do.
What, is there any other course other than Augusta that kind of jumps out where you really weight it more heavily than others?
The Heritage is one that I'll see a lot on that. And, you know, that was somebody like Luke Donald performing well there.
Right.
But that's one that immediately comes to mind is the one in South Carolina.
How much more difficult is it for you when setting odds for a major versus a regular tour event? Obviously, you get the major odds out there a lot more in advance. So I assume it's a little more difficult, but I wonder what's the different process for you and which is tougher?
Well, when I do the major odds, I get those up the day after or even the night after the conclusion of the prior major.
Right.
And so as a major is going on, I'm even doing prep work on that upcoming major the week before the conclusion of that current major. And I generally am looking at how these golfers are playing those type of courses when I'm doing that stats. I've been aware of how their current form is, so I don't really dig deep into that because it's so far out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm putting together if I can see any kind of trends on how they're playing that certain type of major when I'm compiling these odds. So it's just a general guideline to when I get those odds up, you're going to see a reflection on how those golfers play those type of courses. And you know, then you'll see the current form leading up to that really start shaping those odds the closer we get. So they're just both different types of odd-making processes I use for those. The weekly one, obviously I'm putting all that strength into the current form when I'm compiling those odds. And the majors, I'm putting a little bit more into how they're playing it up until the weeks leading up to it.
So with that being said, how does a course like Shinnecock Hills, which is obviously hosting this year's U.S. Open, how does that change things? It's a course that, you know, they don't see on a regular basis. They haven't had the U.S. Open in 14 years there. And they've done a lot to the golf course since then. So how much specific research do you do on a course like that? And how does that factor in?
Yeah, I mean, I take a look at how some of these guys played, obviously, in 2004, but I don't put much into that because mm-hmm. it was so long ago. But right. I just want to be aware of that.
Sure.
But I want to go back and look at recently how some of these guys played in U.S. Opens, even though we've seen U.S. Opens changing from what we're used to with, like, Brooks Koepka winning at 16 under par and going so low. I expect Shinnecock to play much more difficult than that. When we've seen it in rotations, it's been more challenging. And hopefully coming off a year like Koepka had with that, they're going to make the course more challenging for these guys. Mm-hmm. But I tend to look at some of those the courses going back where we've seen some form from some guys. Like I looked at Jason Day, and he's been running well there. I went a little bit lower on him than I had originally had in my notes. Brandon Grace is a guy that comes to mind. He's got some good U.S. Open history mm-hmm. recently, and generally he's been around 100-1 for majors, but he started out at 50-1 for this. So some of these guys are just conducive to the conditions that they're used to seeing. That's how I go with it.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Aaron Hills last year was a totally different test. Even Chambers Bay in 2015. Has, you know, the USGA kind of thrown a little bit of a wrench into this with some of these different, quote, different courses from, you know, typical U.S. Open setup?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, and the biggest wrench that they've thrown into it is for when I make the propositions and try to come up with the winning score like that. That's the biggest challenge I'm facing right now with this. I mean, Augusta's great because you got the same course going over years, and I get those out as soon as I can, and you have so much to go by. And even if they change the course a little bit, you still have so much history on the one course. And then you know the conditions to expect where they're variable at the Open Championship and then the PGA, you know, in some regards. That's, you know, more of just a general tournament, the way we look at things in a major. But with the U.S. Open and how you're seeing such a change from what we're used to seeing where, you know, par was a target score for so many years, and now you've got these guys going so low. That's really the most difficult aspect is when I'm making the propositions on this tournament.
Is total score or winning score the most popular prop bet that you guys take on a weekly basis?
Well, we do that just for the majors.
For the majors, right.
Sometimes during the weekly basis, I'll do props about a golfer finishing top five, top ten, simple things like that. And the simpler I can make it, the more action we're going to get from the public. But the winning score is one that always has commanded action because even no matter what we come up with, you're going to have such a wide range of opinions on that stuff from what people are reading and who they're reading it from and things like that, that we always see tremendous action, sometimes one-sided action, you know, in the day leading up to it based on changing, you know, weather conditions.
Right.
But you'll see a lot of different polls on that one just because whatever number we throw out there, people are going to have an opinion on that.
I wonder, do people usually bet, are more people betting on low scores versus high? Because I feel like in football and basketball, the more fun bet is to kind of take the over in points total. You don't want to see a slugfest game, or you don't want to see guys grinding out pars. Is that kind of the same in golf, or is it varied?
No, it's different in the golf because with, like I mentioned earlier, with the matchups and even with the propositions, we get over 90% of our play on that from the sharp players, and most of the general public keeps their wagers into the outright market where they like the large payoff and such. So it's mostly just sharp play, and if you know, they'll just bet it based on their perception of your number, and so there's no trend that you can find in that where we're seeing mostly, you know, over first round scores and such. You know, we don't do the first round scores for the Open Championship just because of the variable conditions there. And when we used to do that, you would see someone come in and just bet either everyone over or everyone under based on the changing conditions. So it's really just so much sharp play that there is no trend betting from that respect. You know, there are trends in the matchup market from the sharp players where they have their power rating structure, and you'll generally see them go on or against certain golfers consistently based on what the market has.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about a few U.S. Open odds then. Obviously, these can change, especially the first name I want to throw out there. We've already talked about him a lot. Tiger Woods, currently 20-1. You said he opened at 25. Just the general thought right now of, I know you've kind of touched on it, but why Tiger Woods is 20-1 right now. He's just below, I think, those top five favorites, but he's also, you know, pretty high for a guy who hasn't won a major in 10 years, hasn't won a tournament and whatever. Explain his odds.
Yeah, you know, I just tried to open them in a range that we weren't going to get inundated with support and have immediate liability too high, which I thought that was about fair in relation based on the course we're going to, based on the players in the field, obviously. But, you know, I'm respecting where I've seen his game. Like I mentioned, the Players' Championship, he came on and did strong there. He's had a solid season. He's been improving areas that he's had trouble in. And ultimately, we're seeing a healthy Tiger Woods, which we haven't seen in a few years. Mm. So you always get the betting support behind Tiger from the general public, even when his odds sometimes are half of what they really should be based on where his performance on the course is. So, you know, I just open him in that range. We're still seeing support at him. I knocked him down to 20 after the Players' Championship. We're still seeing tickets on him on a daily basis. And I do expect by the time the U.S. Open starts, he will be one of our liabilities, as he is with each tournament and each major.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Reed is obviously the reigning Masters champ. He's, you know, looks like he's in form. He is only 30-1, though, which, you know, I know he hasn't done much at the U.S. Open. Maybe that's why he's only 31. But still, kind of the reigning Masters champ, I think a lot of people would wonder why he's not one of the favorites.
Well, the toughest thing I've seen through the years is these guys going and went back-to-back majors.
Mm.
So that factors into my thinking a little bit when I'm pricing him, where he was in a real solid run of form. He does have some decent performances now, albeit last year he finished 13th where they shot low.
Right.
Chambers Bay finished 14th. So, you know, it's not so much that with the U.S. Open form, but even when Sergio Garcia won the Masters last year, the next major U.S. Open, I wanted to ease him up a little bit because generally we don't see as much action on these guys when they're expected to go back-to-back.
Hmm.
But if it's somebody like a Dustin Johnson or Rory McIlroy that is at the top of the betting board, there's more faith from the betting public that those type of players can go back-to-back rather than somebody that was a 30, 40, 80-1 shot
mm-hmm.
that won their major, and now what you're seeing for the next one. Now, 30-1 I thought was accounted for being in a respectable position on the odds board, but like I mentioned, it's really difficult to go out there and win those back-to-back.
Sure. You mentioned Rory McIlroy. I was going to ask you about him. I wonder just because now, you know, we're coming up on almost 4 years since he won his last major. Of course, he won the four majors kind of right away, and two of them were blowouts. Has he been the guy who maybe you guys have made the most off of? Maybe is he the most overvalued guy? Because obviously you always kind of have to slot him as one of the favorites, and he is again for the U.S. Open just because he's so talented and he can go off at any point. But it seems like in the big tournaments, obviously, he hasn't won the last few years. So have you guys kind of cleaned up on Rory?
Well, he's the one guy at the top of our odds board between Dustin Johnson, Speed Thomas, Ricky Fowler, those guys that really ends up being one of our better positions. He gets the least support as far as money goes generally amongst those golfers. And it's interesting because I know the European market generally will have lower odds on Rory
mm-hmm.
than we do over here because I think they're seeing much more betting support over there.
Hmm.
And it's the same way with Tiger over here. I know we see more Tiger support over here and Spieth support too. So there's different markets out there for this on where the support comes. But McIlroy is one of those guys that doesn't see quite as much as everyone else. And based on what you said about him not winning the majors and not even winning as many tournaments recently
right.
in the past couple of years, you know, I try to ease his odds out to attract some money. So sometimes you'll see our odds a little bit higher than the European or worldwide market.
Hmm.
And there's just other golfers that get pointed to. And like I mentioned, Spieth is an extremely popular one when it comes to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
And his odds over here in Las Vegas might be lower than what you'll find out there in other places.
Tommy Fleetwood seems like, you know, a top 10 talent, fourth place at last year's U.S. Open. Again, I know that was a different type of test, but just a great, you know, tee to green, just arguably the best guy right now. 40-1 odds seems a little low. Is that what you're kind of mentioning, that he's not getting the support in the U.S.?
that's how it is for our market. And you know, once in a while we'll see it from him or on him. And but it's not consistent. You know, it's first of all, a lot of the times people will bet golfers that they have to have already done it, and that's where you'll see the consistent support. And he hasn't won that major, so if he does, then he'll crack up into even a lower odds range on him, maybe 25-1 you'd find him at or something like that. But until he does it, he's not getting the consistent support for these tournaments. Now, he did last year, I believe it was at the Open Championship on his home course, and everyone knew that.
Right,
so
right.
He saw excessive support in that instance. But other than that, you know, we can find him offering fair odds on him. Guy like Alex Norton's the same way. Mm-hmm. He's been having a great last couple of years, but he just doesn't get the consistent support. He gets support from people that wager on golf that really follow golf, not just the general fan, when it gets to the majors that get involved in it and helps to increase our handle overall. So we'll see less support as a whole on that.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you if there are any you know, guys who jump out as being undervalued that the public really just hasn't jumped on yet, and yet they're very good. But I guess if I ask you that, you'll say that a lot of those players are maybe the international players, that the casual U.S. golf fan doesn't know the Alex Norins and the Fleetwoods. Are those the guys who are the most undervalued then, or are there, you know, guys like Kevin Kisner or somebody like that who are still a little under the radar?
Yeah, it's mostly the European golfers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes the young golfers who haven't quite won that people do want to get behind, and they did for the Masters, like Patrick Cantlay. And, you know, we expect him to break through in the next couple of years, and you're finding him at some nice prices. But, you know, right now you can find him at 60-1, and once he wins that major, you won't be able to find him at odds like that. So we do get a certain percentage of those that wager will target guys like that. But it's not as a whole and consistent and things like that, almost like the European golfers over here in the Vegas market, that you can find them and spread them out in your portfolio and have some nice prices on these guys with them having the ability to crack through soon.
I love that you mentioned Patrick Cantlay. That's my man now. That I was in Vegas for a few days for that the major series of putting. I bet on him at the Shriners and he won. So that's my man forever now. 18-1 action. So let's move on from the U.S. Open. Oh, by the way, Patrick Cantlay, 60-1. So if you guys like him in the next couple of years, he sounds like a pretty good value there. We've got to move on to the huge, obviously, decision, Supreme Court ruling recently to strike down that federal ban. Obviously, it doesn't mean that you can gamble in your state yet, but now you have an opportunity where your state might get on board. What was your reaction to this? And I mean, I'm sure you were maybe expecting it, but what was your reaction to it?
Yeah, you know, it's been expected out here for a few years now, okay. And we've been gearing up for it and hoping it was going to happen. I mean, there's, you know, we're a highly regulated industry. We've been that way for a long time. There's no reason that it wasn't available. It was just driving money to places it shouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to give the operators out here the opportunity to expand our product beyond the Nevada borders. Hmm. And that's what we're looking at doing, is taking the Superbook brand and even this contest that we offer for the NFL and having that available beyond Nevada. And so in the next few years, that's where we want to reach to. And we think it's nothing but a great thing. You see wagering going on in all over other parts of the world. And as long as there's regulation, you know, the interesting thing is you have these leagues that are trying to throw out there an integrity fee. Well, the integrity is by us having a regulated industry
right
from the start. So, you know, that stuff, we've never paid an integrity fee. There's no reason to do it, because our interest is in the integrity of the game and making sure that the consumer for us is getting a fair shake in their perception of what's going on. So, you know, we've seen examples where we've had to contact authorities and being regulated is the integrity of the game from our perspective. So it's we can't wait for to rapidly grow across the U.S. And we're really looking forward to this and having the opportunity, like I said, to reach different segments out there that can now wager legally on it.
That's interesting, because obviously, like, a lot of people reacted and said, "Oh man, this is really bad for Las Vegas, because now people can just do it in our state." But you guys are, because you're set up already, you're kind of in position to really seize upon this?
Well, here's where I think it's going to go ultimately. And it doesn't mean it will, but this is just my thought process. Now, if you look up and down the Las Vegas Strip, you've got these large casinos that have multi-million-dollar racing sports books.
Mm-hmm.
And with this opening up legally nationwide, what these books want to do that are expanding, they want to have the consumer be given the opportunity to wager. And I don't think they're going to be pumping in the multi-millions to build these lavish books
mm-hmm.
and have a high payroll expense. You know, in the last few years, we've gone mobile, and that has accounted for about 50% of our wagering handle.
Hmm.
And when this expands across the U.S., that is going to be the optimal thing for the book operators, is for people to have mobile accounts. I know William Hill is going to be opening up a book at the Meadowlands within the next month or so. And you just have to think of, if you had somebody that lived 20 minutes outside of there, are they going to go to the Meadowlands, go into the racetrack to make a $20 bet, and then have to go back the next day to cash that $20 bet? You'll have some people that do that.
Right.
But as a whole, if you can just have where people sign up for mobile accounts and do it that way, that's going to be the more efficient way from the bettor and the book operator. So I think you're going to see it go that direction long term.
Hmm.
And so all the places that are out here in Las Vegas are still going to offer a unique experience that's part of the Las Vegas experience.
Hmm.
And I don't think that's ever going to be replicated.
Sure. You know, I wonder, you talk about Las Vegas. I know you're a Vegas Knights fan, Golden Knights, I'm sorry. But obviously the big story is how so many people bet on them before the season at these high odds. I know Westgate offered as high as 500-1. You have a lot of tickets at 300-1, I think you said. How is it for you as a fan? You're rooting for them, but it's kind of, is it bad for business if they do win the Stanley Cup?
No, you know, it's all we can do is you treat it like the other things that we book. You know, you go in and do your job and book it as you book anything else. And, you know, we have ways of offsetting the liability that we have. So we had our liability that was upper six figures earlier in the year. But, you know, in the last few months, we put the Knights up almost like we've done when Tiger was going well, where mm-hmm. we put the Knights against the field to win the Stanley Cup.
Mm.
For the last few months, we've had people betting the field against the Knights.
Okay.
Now, the Knights are favored against the Capitals for the Stanley Cup. So all those early wagers were at prices that were beneficial for the book compared to where they are now.
Mm.
And it has reduced our liability from basically upper six figures to less than mid six figures. So it's helped us out. So there's a way of booking things that can put us in a position that's more acceptable. And believe me, if they end up parading the Stanley Cup down the Las Vegas Strip, the books in this town will be more than happy to pay off to those winners.
Well, obviously, one of your other teams, the Raiders, is going to be moving to Las Vegas. And I'm wondering now, whenever they do move there, will this kind of serve as a lesson, though, to maybe, you know, curtail those odds, because everybody in Las Vegas is going to want to bet on the Raiders. Obviously, football is a much bigger sport to bet on.
Well, you're going to see odds maybe reduce a little bit, but mm-hmm. it's going to be sports specific. You know, if you look at the NBA, the NBA is so top heavy right now with five or six teams that
right.
everyone believes in, that you're going to have some teams like going in next year, the Atlanta Hawks. There's no reason to have them at 100-1. You're not going to get any money on them. So we can go ahead and go 500, 1,000, or whatever they might need to be.
Mm-hmm.
For hockey, at the point hockey's in, it's obviously more wide open. And with what the Knights did, I don't think you're going to see any teams beyond 100-1. I believe we just put up next year, and we have two teams at 100-1, the Red Wings, and I can't recall the other team. We just got this up, but we have the Knights at 10-1 for next year. In regards to the Raiders, we're already seeing Raiders support for this upcoming NFL season that's bringing their odds into an odds range that is similar to teams that we have higher power rated than they are at this time. So we're seeing that almost false support by them being in the betting market out here. And we've also recently experienced that with the Las Vegas Aces, the WNBA team that has recently moved here from San Antonio. This is our first year in Las Vegas. We opened them at 100-1. They're already down to 20-1
because
of locals supporting them. So if people are looking to bet the Las Vegas teams when they come to Las Vegas, they're going to get odds almost like they get Tiger on a weekly basis, where
right.
they're less than they should be because of all the support that they're getting.
Right. Again, we keep going back to Tiger here, but what was the biggest loss, that golf loss that you can remember, and did it involve Tiger winning a major?
Oh man, it wasn't Tiger. I couldn't tell you who that was. I mean, sometimes I have trouble remembering what happened last week. I've got my hands in so many things that, you know, as far as going back in time, I'd really have to go back and look that up to mm-hmm. let you know who the individual was our worst result in that. But, you know, it's I'm involved in soccer. You know, right now I'm even making hockey props for the Stanley Cup. So much more of my time is spent forward thinking rather than trying to remember so much what we did back then.
Right. But just I remember, you know, he was basically even odds against the field at some point in some of these majors when he was winning the Tiger Slam and all that. I just wonder, when he was that low of odds, was he was that good or bad for business?
No, it was it wasn't like we had a lot of liability. We had a lot of betting support for him back then, but we also had a lot of people that were taking the field. I remember one of the U.S. Opens around the century where he was an odds-on favorite for that. So we had people that were taking the field at even money against him.
That's amazing.
So there was plenty of that, and the liabilities wouldn't add up too much. Oftentimes, we do really well when he was winning at 5-2 or less because you get your bets, and even large bets, they wouldn't add up compared to what they would when you spread it out over the whole field. So that was a good time for the books from what I remember of that. That we did really well on Tiger when he was short odds back then. Mm-hmm. Now, if he were to win at these longer odds, that's where we're going to see. And, you know, the last two Masters that he's been involved in, had he come away with one of those, that would have been our largest loss that we've ever had on a golf tournament.
Wow. But now you're mentioning, though, Ricky Fowler has the most money right now at the Masters and at the U.S. Open. So is it safe to say that you guys are rooting against Ricky Fowler at Shinnecock?
Well, right now he's a liability, but we still have a long way to go on that. And okay. He's in a short enough odds range that we'll be able to minimize some of that down. So there's still such a long way to go, and we get most of our action that comes in on the majors the week of it. So a lot can happen. A lot can take place. We take large wagers on those. You know, you'll typically see someone come up and bet $5,000 or $10,000 on a golfer for the majors, where you'd never see that on a weekly tournament. We might have somebody come up and bet $1,000 or $2,000 on a weekly tournament. So there's so much that can take shape on this that really until maybe the day leading up to it, we won't know where we're actually looking at our final position.
Well, yeah, everything's always changing. And obviously you do such a great job updating it. And on your Twitter handle, especially at Golf Odds, must follow. I wonder, are there any pro athletes that follow you that you've noticed? You don't have to name names, but just, are there any athletes that kind of keep tabs on? Because a lot of your tweets are obviously gambling-related odds tweets.
Yeah, I've got a few. I've got a few that have been, and I'll even interact with some of them sometimes.
Okay.
That stuff, and that they're good with it. So there's a few out there, and like I won't mention the names, yeah. but I've got a few in various sports that do, and I'm sure that they've just seen it, whether, you know, our odds are always up on ESPN, and, you know, they might refer to them that way, and they want to be just have knowledge of where they might be sitting in the odds market, because I do tweet more than just the golf, even though I'm at a golf odds. I try to keep up on everything that's, you know, pertinent information that people might be interested in on a daily basis throughout the playoffs. I've been tweeting out the Stanley Cup odds with the Knights and the NBA title odds and things like that. So, you know, there's athletes out there that they might not even be playing in it or anything like that, but they still want to just be aware of what the market is.
Yeah, I mean, gambling, it's amazing to me it's taken so long for this potentially nationwide legalized gambling. I mean, we talk about it all the time. ESPN SportsCenter now puts up the lines every night. It seemed like it was a long time coming.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, a big thing that's helped us out with that is in the last maybe 4 or 5 years, they've really been pushing, the media markets have been pushing this out there and making it available.
Right.
And that's helped with some of the acceptance of it, just for people to be in the know,
right?
And you know, as much as ESPN pushes our odds and things like that, it's a talking point for everybody, and people see it as an entertainment thing and not a bad thing. And, you know, it's just been more in the spotlight recently that has helped us get to where we're at today.
Sure. I just want to finish here. I know you're a Lakers fan as well. I wonder, I have no idea, what are the odds, the current odds that you guys are offering on LeBron going to the Lakers, and what are the real odds in your mind of that happening?
Well, I wish we could offer. See, we're not allowed to offer things like that per Nevada Gaming.
Oh, okay. My fault.
Yeah, that's something that you might find in the European markets or the offshore markets, but for Nevada Gaming regulations, we have to do something that takes place on the field of play.
Okay.
We can approve some new wager offerings. That the only thing we could do along those lines is they let us do MVP and Rookie of the Year that's voted upon in the NBA, the NFL, okay, stuff like that.
Right.
But as far as where a player is changing teams, that's not something that they have approved at this time. Hopefully they will down the road, because there might be some other states or jurisdictions that will allow that, and then we'll need to allow that to stay competitive. There's going to be a lot of that going on, but at this time we don't have it. If I had to put up odds on where he's going, I honestly would make the 76ers a favorite right now. I think it behooves him to stay in the Eastern Conference with that young talent and go right there. And if I had the market up, I'd have them the favorite, probably Houston second, the Lakers third. There's a lot of things that would have to happen with the Lakers. And I know they're going to go after Paul George, and I hope they keep Julius Randle. I really like the direction he's going at his age. I think if they can keep him, maybe add George, and then they'll have money for a year later for somebody else that's in the free agent market. You know, LeBron is getting gassed, and I think it's in LeBron's best interest to sign a 5-year max deal, because I think he's probably got 2 years left and take on more of a role with that team. But there's other directions I'd like to see the Lakers go than LeBron, just from that standpoint, a longevity standpoint. But I would have the Sixers favored right now for him.
Okay. Were you happy with Lonzo Ball's rookie year?
To a degree. He was in and out of the lineup. He went through a lot of injuries. Kuzma had a better season than he did.
Sure.
He was a little bit more healthy and really had a lot of dimensions to his game. I think Lonzo is going to be a tremendous player, but he needs to be on the court and get that experience. Like, I saw the growth in Brandon Ingram over this last season.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as these guys can get some time on the court, there's a lot of young potential on this team. They're much more attractive to free agents. Their front office is more attractive now that they switched those regimes. So it's definitely going in a positive direction. It's been tough for the last 5 years for me. I'm out there each year to support them and go to a game and such. But I'm looking forward to where the next few years is going.
Yeah, well, try being a Knicks fan, Jeff. It's even tougher. So you guys win titles in bunches when you do win. So anyway, Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you got a busy few weeks ahead of you for the U.S. Open. Thanks for sharing your insight. And again, follow this guy on Twitter, Golf Odds. It's not just Golf Odds. It's odds on everything. Great stuff. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Take care.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks again to Jeff Sherman for joining us. And guys, before we wrap it up, you know, we've talked a little about the highs and the lows of gambling. I'm wondering, Joel, what are some great or not so great moments in your gambling history that you can recall?
Great would have to be the Cardinals-Steelers Super Bowl that's almost a decade ago now, right?
That's a bad one for me.
Bad one. Yeah. Ooh, well, sorry to rub this in, but I was able to basically pay my final semester of tuition off that bet, and it was basically it was basically a pretty big parlay it was a month parlay, but I was so nervous I couldn't even watch the game. I was playing basketball, and I luckily saw a Steelers fan on the second floor run with their arm in the air, so I was like, "Whew, all right, I can finish my degree."
You just needed them to win.
Just needed them to win.
Wow.
So that was sick.
There.
It got very dicey. So I was already planning on what lie I was putting up to tell my mom how I lost all this money.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was one of the bigger wins.
Wow, that changed your life.
It did.
I before you give your other one, I had the under in that game. And it was like the lowest scoring Super Bowl until the last 10 minutes or five touchdowns. So that was a day.
And everyone talks about the Holmes catch. But the play before halftime.
Yeah, right before halftime.
And
yeah.
I'm a Giants fan, and I think the Tyree thing.
Yeah.
But I think that James Harrison, that's the greatest play.
Unbelievable
it's
touchdown.
Almost impossible. Yeah.
I think he's still sucking from the oxygen. Yeah. Oxygen mask from that play.
But just the fact that everyone got out to block. Yeah. It was, unbelievable.
But even then, how the under didn't come in. All right, Joel.
Probably like 49, right?
Or something. Yeah.
Probably one of the worst. And it's funny because Ryan, Carly and I were just joking about, he was making fun of me for betting on the spelling bee a couple weeks ago.
That's a low point.
It was well, no.
Better than Indiana Rutgers.
So the 2014 spelling bee, I had a lot going. And
wait, you bet on multiple spelling bees?
I mean, this is an annual thing.
Oh my
so.
God.
I had, I mean, if it's a tradition,
it was down to it was down to two kids, and if one guy won, it would have been a nice little vacation. Instead, he lost, and not I wasn't trying to act up. I just took my shoe off and threw it, and the shoe bounced off the table and hit the TV and broke the TV. So that had to be the worst.
That's pretty bad, Chris. What do you got?
I mean, I don't know if I have many good ones, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you're kind of the mush of the
yeah.
group.
I guess I would say the best one was. Again, more degeneracy here. It was like one of the bowl games over this past Christmas break. It was like an over of UCF, South Florida, or whoever South Florida was playing, and it was not going to hit, and then they scored like 21 points in like the last 30 seconds, so that was nice. But, you know, an obscure game, but to kind of, for something the listeners will recognize, I had the Seahawks against the Patriots in the full game, Super
okay.
Bowl.
Yep.
And then I felt so good about it that I did it again, Seahawks second half.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's like the ultimate dagger, yep. The interception. And then I took the Indians in game seven against the Cubs when Rajai Davis tied the game.
Yep.
Feeling good. And then they blew it. And, the best one.
Here we go.
You remember the tournament this year, the Michigan-Houston game? I took Houston money line, and that freshman hit like a half-court three from Michigan. At the buzzer.
Oh.
The kid with the ponytail on Houston
yeah.
goes to the lane, gets the layup. 3 seconds left.
Yeah.
Money line, Houston, yeah. And then Michigan
oh,
hits
Oh, my
the
goodness.
I mean, just
that's
brutal.
You know, it's funny. College basketball, to me, the end of those games, now that was still like a game.
Right.
But you get these situations at the end of the game and you have the over or the line's like 11 or something. They put these like scrubs in. They keep playing.
Yep,
and so it kind of screws it up. And then you'll see like a college team, NBA – you know, like last night in the Cavs game, NBA, when a team is down by 8 with 30 seconds left, 20 seconds left, they're not going to foul. The college kids, they still hack. And you're like, stop fouling. The game is over.
Down by
and,
12 with
know,
20 seconds.
I've seen ones where, like, you know, they show the guys going to shake hands. And then in the background, you see some kid like, oh, nobody's guarding me. And they lay it up at the buzzer. And you're like, what are you doing? So that can be college basketball to me.
This is the worst.
Is the worst. My first huge game, again, you're going to laugh, seventh grade, me and a buddy, another friend named Alex, so we've now been known since as Team Al, and Team Al is not very popular because we've had some big gambling wins together against our other friends. We bet on Evander Holyfield against Mike Tyson.
Ooh.
And this was before we even knew about odds or anything. I just remember they showed a commercial of Tyson like pummeling these opponents leading up to the fight. And my one friend was like, oh, there's no way he's going to lose. So we were like, oh, we'll bet on Evander Holyfield. He gave us 50-1 odds on a dollar. This is, we're in seventh grade. So he lost $50 to both of us. He had to pay it off in installments for months. I think I collected
three
like
easy payments of
$40 tops out of the 50. It was like I won a fortune. I felt bad for George. Sorry, George, if you're listening. But, yeah, Evander Holyfield taking on Mike Tyson, 50-1 odds. Those are not obviously the real odds. And then I hit on 66-1 odds, Danny Willett at the Masters a couple years ago. I was the only person. I was at Augusta in the press room. And I wasn't, like, rooting, but I was sitting there like, come on, Danny boy. And everyone in the world was rooting for Jordan Spieth. And I was like, Willett. And he came through 66-1. Again, through a friend who made it on an online thing, I never thought I was going to see the money. Got the check, $660. Amazing.
You spoke with an energy in your eyes.
I'll cherish that forever.
Will it?
But I'll also remember forever that a few years before, same friend and I had bet on a group of us actually had each put $10 on five guys, including Louis Oosthuizen, at 90-1. And Bubba Watson hit that wedge out of the rough.
Poor Louis.
It was over and hit one of the all-time crazy shots, beat Louis. Louis made the albatross that day. I mean, it was all going our way. We were getting so greedy. We had Kuchar and Louis. We had Kuchar at like 60-1, Louis at 91. We were rooting against Kuchar because we're like, no, we want the bigger payout here.
That's the first time I've also heard anybody rooting against Matt Kuchar.
I know. I feel bad, but you know he wasn't going to win anyway. So come on. All right. Speaking of major bets, we will end with let's each make a U.S. Open gambling bet. And hey, Powers, maybe you can go and to one of your local spots and place it for us, and we won't be hiding in the shadows. we can do this legally. We can talk about it. We can celebrate it when we win. So, Chris, I'll start with you. Who do you like?
At Shinnecock Hills. I love John Rahm this year. Ooh. I think he had his majors, his first run in the majors last year that didn't go so well.
Right.
You know, obviously his temper was on full display, especially at Erin Hills.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But big step at the Masters for sure. Nice final round. And he's playing well right now. He played well at Colonial and I forget where else. But I do like Rahm at 18-1 or 20-1.
Yeah, I'm seeing 20-1 for him.
No, I really like that.
That's pretty good. Sure. Yeah, when he's like twice the odds as a DJ or a McIlroy.
Just for the odds, 60-1, Mark Leishman. Very, very good win player.
Crazy. Always underrated.
Always seems to be right there in the mix in big events. Last, I don't know what, 18 months, seems like he's been a top 15, top 20 player in the world. I feel like the hit, Pater, the wins really have to keep going. If it's relatively tame, I don't think he's got the game to go, 8-9 under, at least at that course. But if it stays around even par, I think this suits up well for Leishman. So if you're looking for kind of a bit of a dark horse bet, if you can even call Mark Leishman a dark horse, I would circle him.
Oh, I mean, if he's that low of odds, I still call him a dark horse. That's crazy. I mean, he's a top 20 player in the world. The guy who I'd been circling all year, and then, of course, now he gets hot, he wins Colonial and everything, it was Justin Rose. I think he was 25 or 30 still. I thought he should be the favorite. He's now down to 16, so he is closer to his favorite. So I probably would lean away from it. I think he is deserving of the favorite status. But the guy who I would put on – and it's a little bit of a flyer because he's struggled since he won the Masters last year. But Sergio Garcia at 40-1, everybody's talking about how there's going to be such a premium on driving again at the U.S. Open, which obviously at Erin Hills there was not a premium. I'm sorry, that was not a U.S. Open to me. I was not a big fan of that setup. I think it's going to be back to, finding the fairway, maybe – finding the fairway with long irons, having long irons in. I mean, I think it just suits his game. And, I think he's underrated right now. I think 40-1, I just think for a guy that good, I'm not going to bet. Does Sergio Garcia really have four times less of a chance of winning as like a Dustin Johnson? I don't think so. I think it's more like twice as unlikely. And so I think you're getting some value there.
He's had a relatively decent track record at U.S. Opens.
Right,
he was
right
there
right.
at Oakmont.
Exactly.
It's not a guy who – it's funny. I mean, when he won the Masters, it took us all by surprise because that was a course he historically hated.
Exactly.
Whereas he seems to really do well in this type of environment. I also like to throw out Tommy Fleetwood, I feel. Also right there. He played really well this year. And not a guy who hits it – I mean, he's long, but he also can combine that with some accuracy off the tee. Short game's a little bit of a worry, but I feel like these type of conditions are so hard, it kind of renders everybody to a different plane. So I think Fleetwood's the guy who at least has to be on your radar.
Fleetwood, when I did my initial rankings, he was my best value bet. He was 40-1. Now he's since gone to 30, unfortunately. I think Jeff Sherman changed the odds once I told him he was my favorite bet. So, Jeff, thanks a lot for doing that. But anyway, so – all right, well, guys, it's been a lot of fun talking about gambling. It's great that it's kind of legal now. We can all,
We should do a return here in the next year and see if we still have jobs.
Right.
The bank account's emptied at this point.
Exactly. Exactly. We'll say, good luck to everybody out there. If you do gamble, don't go crazy.
Yeah.
But enjoy yourself. Have some fun. Thanks again to Jeff Sherman for joining us. And enjoy the U.S. Open. And please check back next week to see our guest is.